No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, a member of the USA Today Sports Media Group of the NFL Wire. And my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals team site, and also one of the co-hosts of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything going? We're kind of ignore the fact that the Cardinals just lost again, aren't we? Or we have to talk about that, don't we?
Yeah, a little bit. It's one of those things, you know, man, like, I think the writing was on the wall after game one, and we didn't want to believe it. And the writing was clear after game three and game four. And then coming out of the bye, you know, you and I talked about it a little bit last week off the air. I don't think enough people made a big deal out of the fact that the Arizona Cardinals had to get a game-winning drive to beat the San Francisco 49ers coming off a bye week at home. And so through all of that, you get the 4-5-1 Arizona Cardinals. This is not the eulogy of the season, but that eulogy is probably coming up in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Very, very likely. Yes, the Arizona Cardinals, who needed a win in the worst way, go to Minnesota. And while there are some positive things that happened during the game, made enough mistakes and had some of the same issues appear as has been the case all season. And they drop to 4-5-1, 4-5-1 in the season, losing 30-24 to the Minnesota Vikings, who had lost four in a row. And we're going to talk about that. That's kind of what's on tap. The Cardinals, 4-5-1, back in the NFC West, two games back in the wild card race, now sitting as the number 10 seed. If the season ended today, they would have the 12th pick in the NFL draft. So it's clearly not where we wanted to do, but. There's more than that. The things just can't exactly right for the Cardinals is after the Minnesota game, Coach Bruce Arians suffers some chest pains, some discomfort on his way on the flight home. He checks into a hospital and is there overnight for most of Monday. So there was a health scare. The second one in this year, but he was back at work on Tuesday. And so everything appears to be fine. The Cardinals also made a roster move on Tuesday, announced that they let go of, on an injury settlement, linebacker Jop Lubartu. And to replace Tim, they added Barr. First played for the Colts early this season as a starter, then released, then signed by the Chiefs. But they add him as a depth linebacker guy, special teams. Basically a place, someone to put on the roster late on the season, is what we add. And tonight's show, we're kind of got to talk about the Cardinals and that loss. Cause there's definitely a lot to talk about, some positive, a lot of negative. We're going to talk about the playoff race, where the Cardinals stand, how much life they still have. Cause they're still in it. I mean, if we're being real, they're really still in it, even if it's bleak. And then we're going to look ahead to the next game that they have coming up on the road. Another early start in Atlanta against the division leading Atlanta Falcons. But before we get started, we'd like to let you know that this show is brought to you by FanEssentials.net for the sports fan that likes collecting gear from their favorite team, whether it be NFL, NBA, or any team. Cardinals fans, you will love FanEssentials.net, as if you are one who likes to collect gear of your team, but don't necessarily have the time to go find it or collect it. Or FanEssentials.net is the perfect place for you, because you sign up, you pick the team, the gear right to your door every month. And it's perfect for the sports fan. It's a perfect gift as we're coming up on the holiday season for any sports fan. Perfect thing to start off. And their plans start off at $34.99 a month. And for Rise of Sea Red listeners, we've got a special deal for you. If you use the promo code CRED, again, that's FanEssentials.net. Use the promo code CRED, you'll get 15% off of your first month. So go ahead and head on over to FanEssentials.net. Collect that Cardinals gear. Gift that to another team, another fan of some other team, and enjoy getting your gear month after month after month. Again, FanEssentials.net for every essential that you need. Let's go ahead and get started talking about, first and foremost, this health scare that we haven't really heard anything yet. I saw that there was a video on azcardinals.com. I haven't had a chance to listen to it. It has some internet issues as I was out and about with my son this evening, so I didn't get a chance to see or what it was about. Seth, did you happen to catch that, and what did he address the health issues to the team? I know he's back. How concerning is this for a guy who is not young by any stretch of the imagination?
Well, and I mean, you know, not playing a doctor, but he's not even like the healthiest looking dude in the world either. Let's be completely honest about that. Like, I love Coach Arians. You know, this is not a shot at him, but you know, it's not like he's the picture of health.
Pete Carroll.
Right. He's not Pete Carroll jumping around on the sideline. Hell, he's not even Mike Zimmer. I'm looking at a picture of the two of them shaking hands. And, you know, Bruce Arians looks like cool Bruce Arians, you know, Uncle Bruce Arians, who drinks beer at all the family get-togethers. And, you know, Mike Zimmer looks like he went for a, you know, 4-mile run before Thanksgiving, you know, the Thanksgiving meal was served. So, you know, it's one of those things, and I'm going to write about it tonight. I'm actually writing it right now, trying to like collect my thoughts on how to explain it. And as somebody that works in healthcare, I work in cancer research. So, you know, it's on a different spectrum and things of that nature, but any time of you get health issues like this, like anytime you have a health scare like this, I think it refocuses, you know, what's important in life. And for Arians, you know, that's clearly football. And, you know, he's not really – he's, what, 63 now? He's not going to change who he is and how he reacts and things of that nature. So, you know, he talked about how it's not good for him to hold it in or anything like that. And, you know, he's going to keep yelling at refs. And I heard Burns and Gambo joking about it today that, oh, he's probably just going to swear more at the refs now and stuff like that. But you worry about, you know, what it means for longevity, not in a selfish, like, oh, you know, is he going to be able to be the coach for the next 10 years? Like, who cares about that? Like, you just worry about, like, hey, is this dude going to be around for 10 more years if he keeps going this hard all the time, you know? And that's what would, you know, persuade me personally. I know his goals are different than, you know, what I have for goals in life, but, you know, you look at it, and his goal is to leave a lasting legacy in the NFL. And that's not just by winning a Super Bowl. That's, you know, creating a coaching tree and having his, you know, hands kind of all over, you know, his fingers all over the NFL and what's going on in the NFL. And I think he's going to keep pushing on and keep doing what he's doing. I don't know if I would say that's the right call, but it's Bruce Arians, and that's the Bruce Arians call. I think we can agree on that.
And, well, for me, obviously, at his age, he's going to do what he's going to do. He's a proud man. He does. I mean, his personality is not one to kind of change things. Obviously, he's going to be smart about things. He's already on a strict diet for whatever the reason is. But there's got a history of this. He's had issues before. He's had some hospital entries. But anything, and I think he's preparing the team for this, is that he is very good about, he's been very good about developing his coaches. He gave Harold Goodwin more responsibility this offseason. They've got an experienced guy in Tom Moore. So it allows him to, if he's learned to kind of hand off some of those and responsibilities, then they're okay. That way they're not scrambling. He still is definitely the emotional leader. I mean, they definitely take characteristics of Bruce Arians in the locker room. And you know, thankfully, everything seems to be okay. The interesting thing of all of this is what Larry Fitzgerald said. You know, they, as players, they feel a bit responsible for what's happened for whatever reason. And I think that's, to say, it almost sounds silly. Yes, BA's had a lot of stress this year because of not. It's been a different type of season than he's really ever had as a coach, because everything he's touched has been gold since he's had the head coaching experience. And so this is an interesting thing. I'm just glad he's back in there. It'd be interesting to see how the team reacts to it. Because on Doug and Wolf radio show this morning talked about how, like, when he was in the hospital during training camp, the Cardinals didn't react well at all. They practiced like poo. They played very poorly in that preseason game. And so it'll be interesting to see if it galvanizes them, or if they lose focus even more. Will be to see how things move forward, because, you know, the relationship he has with his players is unique. Now, a lot of coaches develop really good relationships with their players, but Arians, that's one of his gifts, his ability to players and the relationship he builds with them is just something special. And I hope that they can refocus and recenter their focus to the football side of things. Now, that's as selfish as me as a fan. But once we know that Bruce is fine, if that's the case, they need to do what Bruce really wants them to do, and that's to win football games.
You're right about that. That's what they need to do. But the problem is, like, you know, what's every week going to do when they don't win? It's like, is it going to take more years off his life? Poor guy. Cause you know, his team can't pick him up and help him out. So it's one of those things, like, you know, from the selfish point of view, I think you obviously want him to continue to coach, like you said, because of the success he's had, because of the change in culture that has brought to the Arizona Cardinals. You know, but just from, like, a different point of view, I think this is one of those times in a unique situation where a guy can look at it and go, look, you know, yeah, there's probably more that I can accomplish, but look at everything I've accomplished. You know, all the idiots that for, what, 30 years would not give him a chance as a head coach. You know, even if you want to call it 20 years, wouldn't give him a chance as a head coach. He proved them all wrong. He turned around one of the worst franchises in the NFL, in the history of the NFL. And, you know, if he finishes with 8 wins this year, he's going to be over 500 in every season of his career as a coach for the Arizona Cardinals. And he's, you know, going to show that this isn't, you know, this isn't a bad spot or a spot where you have to go to prove yourself. It's a place you can go to build something and have something, you know, special happen. And it was just extenuating circumstances that were out of his control at this point in his life, that cost him that kind of fairy tale ending.
Well, let's kind of move on to talk about, well, this is not necessarily so pleasant, but let's talk about this loss. The Cardinals now move to 4-5-1. They lose 30-24 to the Minnesota Vikings. Before we get into the many things that went wrong, that did go right. And looks number one, that against a team that's very good against the run, the Cardinals were able to essentially run at will. They ran the ball extremely well. They got away from it, and that's understandably, but let's look at the totals. They ran the ball 28 times for 135 yards. David Johnson with another 100 yard game. Game worked. The defense only allowed 217 yards. Now granted, against an offense that had been really kind of atrocious, they finally had a kick return. They got a punt return they got some explosive plays. They blocked an extra point. So there were some good things going on. I mean, after that, it was and then if you look at Drew Butler, Drew Butler's first punt was terrible. After that, he looked like a decent punter after that, but we'll talk about that in a bit. Looked better than Ryan Quigley did after the first punt.
Yeah, but the first punt put him in a terrible position. And, the thing I didn't ever understand about the Butler, and Quigley for that matter as well, like, you see this guy that who brought him in on a Thursday night? I can't even remember now.
Carolina or New Orleans?
Yeah, Carolina. Who Carolina brought in to replace Andy Lee, who's, one of the better punters in the NFL. And this dude is just bombing 70-yard punts, and you're watching Drew Butler try to get it 35 yards down the field, and you're like, this is depressing. Like, what is going on? And the whole, he could be an emergency kicker thing, that's like keeping Ryan Lindley on your active roster and saying, well, he can be our quarterback once Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton go down. Like, if you're to that point anyways, it's over and done with. Like, you just go for two, right? Or you don't worry about the field goals. There were some good things. I thought the defense played well again. Patrick Peterson held Stephon Diggs, one of the better receivers in the NFL, to 5 catches for 35 yards. Chandler Jones had a big sack. Calais Campbell didn't seem to play as much. I didn't look at the snap counts, but he was out for an elongated period of time. But when he was in there, he was disruptive and effective. I'm trying to think.
For 48 of 58 snaps. So maybe it was just he wasn't as noticed. He was out there for 48 of 58 snaps.
I remember that Kent Summers got asked by multiple people because he was gone for an entire series. And he responded, he's down there on the sideline with his helmet. I don't know what's going on. So he might have, maybe he had to pee or something. I don't know.
Or it might have been a case because I've seen earlier in the season where there will be a series, he comes out. And I've seen it was Peters and Gunter in there or even Gunter and Kandichi who was in there for that point. And that's kind of like how they did with David Johnson on that one series that ended very poorly. Instead of rotating them in and out, you give them just a series off, and that's the rest that they need for the game. That could be the case. Now, it was, Larry Fitzgerald played well. He always tends to play well. Jermaine Gresham in the passing game looked well. They got production out of their tight ends. They had the two very explosive plays. I mean, the one touchdown by Jermaine Gresham, which was a highlight reel type thing where he runs over players and leaps up for the catch, runs over players, stretches out and gets the touchdown. Darren Fells, who as long as he's not hurting himself, he seems to, every time he catches the ball, he's looking to hurdle somebody. It's unwisely. I don't know why he's just trying to jump, just lower to the shoulder pads and go through them. In that sense, they were defensively, they did, in terms of yardage, But let's go to the not so pleasant stuff, because they the same issues, like the exact same issues that they've been dealing with all year, crept up again. Number one, they start slowly. I mean, the beginning of that game could not have gotten worse. They three and out in their first on the, so they get the ball first. And the whole reason, one of the reasons why Bruce Arians likes getting the ball first is simply to be able to get a lead.
So they don't do that anymore.
Three and out.
It's, I don't know if it was like what they gave up for Lent this year or like what's going on, but they don't believe in scoring on the first series of the game anymore. At least they're scoring in the first quarter of games. You know, that's a nice.
Finally did get that.
Yeah,
that's. But that, everything about, like, all three phases of the game was terrible.
It was.
Short and kick. And then it was a big return.
To a short
and then the defense got shredded.
They did.
The defense was shredded that first series. They couldn't stop anything. And even then the refs did their best to, you know, to keep Minnesota from scoring. They nullify the one touchdown. I have no idea how they missed that touchdown catch that they had the challenge to get. That doesn't make any sense at all. The ref is 5 feet away. He has a perfect view of Phelan's feet. And I have no idea how he misses that. It doesn't make any sense at all. So it's like they really tried to keep Minnesota from scoring, but ultimately that first
the Cardinals will not be recovered. But,
so they do poorly on offense, they're poorly on special teams, and they're poor on defense. Just to kids, and guess what? They're down 7-0, and we all know don't play nearly as well behind. That's been trademarks of theirs for three, four seasons, is that when they play from behind as well.
No, they don't.
Early in the game.
Right.
Late in the game, they do. Early in the game, they don't.
But even late in the game, lately, they haven't been playing as well from behind. They haven't been able to, you know, make that full comeback. You saw it against LA, obviously against New England, obviously against Seattle multiple times. They're not able to make the full comeback. So that's weird. But the defense as a whole, they got to figure out, like you said, they got to figure out early, like if one bad thing happens, they can't come out and go, God, is this going to be all on us again? Because it seemed kind of like that's what happened on that first series. Like, they came out, and it was like, oh, man. Like, we're going to have – like, here we go again. You know, and I don't understand why. Like, you still have to have faith that this offense is going to find their rhythm eventually. And from a yard standpoint, they are. You know, it's just the, like, touchdowns that aren't really there anymore.
And it's not the explanation. That's something in terms of looking at the numbers we can look at a little bit later on, is basically the explosiveness of the passing game has gone now. Now that's been traded off with some consistency in the running game, but they're just not being explosive in the passing game. So they're gaining yards, but it's not in chunks. The one thing defensively that's the issue, and it's kind of an important thing, well, they limited Minnesota to 217 yards. They let them convert on almost 50% of their third downs, which it's just brutal. You play that well on first and second down, and then on third down let them continue. So they were 6 of 13, and you look at that, Minnesota only had 16 first downs for the entire game. You know, nearly half of them came on third down. That's just it's not good enough. It's not good enough for a defense that's supposed – I mean, statistically, they're number one. They're the number one defense in the league, and that doesn't make any sense, because the number one defense in the league should not be a team that's 4-5-1.
Well, and the other thing is this. I think stats have lied, you know, more than any other time this season about who the Arizona Cardinals are. And you look at it, and like you said, they're statistically the best defense in the NFL. But I mean, like, I can name, like, if you're saying the Cardinals have to get a stop, right, or a team has to get a stop, how many teams are you going to go through right now before you get to Arizona? And so I know that's not how the best defense in the NFL is measured, but I feel like Seattle would still be picked out of them. Denver would still be
Minnesota. Philadelphia.
Minnesota and Kansas City lately. You know, like, I feel like there's a lot of other teams that people would be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go. And it's because I feel like – like you said, 217 yards, that's phenomenal. That's awesome. Like, 217 yards in a game is extraordinary.
It's dominant.
But they sucked on third downs, and they had two really wishy-washy calls go against them that gave up 30 yards, you know, that doesn't get accounted for in their total yardage. And now all of a sudden, you know, Minnesota is able to convert on that, on those extra 30 yards and score points. And that's the difference in maybe a statistically great defense and an actual great defense, right? Like, they don't get a ton of turnovers, the Cardinals. I know they have a lot of interceptions, but they didn't have one this weekend. And they did have the sack fumble from Chandler Jones. But, you know, they haven't been causing a ton of turnovers, and they've been turning over the ball a lot. And so from a yardage standpoint, as you said, like, yeah, that they're great. It's the other things, though, that are leaving them in bad spots, and then they're not able to kind of revive. I don't know what the right word is. They're not able to overcome the offense or the special teams putting them in those bad spots.
It's true. And so the defense, while it's strong, it's just not great. It's definitely deceiving. So, third down issue. Another thing that continues to come up, and this has been a trend all season, teams problems. Now, we will have to note that they have more positive special teams plays than we've seen in a while. They had the big return by Britton Golden in the kickoff game, which is one of two kickoffs all season that they've started after beyond the 25-yard line. So Britton Golden makes an explosive one. John Brown, he also has a big punt return, a big one. He blocks that extra point, and if the Cardinals can get themselves, that could have been a game-changing type play because it allowed them to be down 6 points as opposed to a full seven down, you know, late in the game. But special teams gaffes. We start with that short punt. So bad punt, big return, 4-yard kickoff return. John Brown not catching that punt at the end that ends up rolling to the 13-yard line.
That was almost worse than the Butler punt. Like, I get the idea of it, but I, you know, like, why just fair catch it? Like, you're right. Outside of it landed outside of the 35, didn't it? Like, right around the 30, 35?
Yeah.
what the hell? Like, what are you thinking? You know, you see these returners all of a sudden fair catching balls inside the 10, but that one, like, I don't know.
And that's one of the things that you know, you were talking to me before the show, Dan Bickley's column, it kind of gets some of the perspective as to what happened. In that situation, almost every single time, who's out? Who's taking that punt return? Peterson. Patrick Peterson. Yeah. And if anything else, you kind of see how his role is in the punt return game. They almost always go with Peterson, number one, it's a punt that could pin them deep in there, because I guess he's got the sure hands and punts, but he's better about judging fair catch for whatever reason. But that would have been a time to have Patrick Peterson out there and at least to fair catch that ball at minimum. But apparently I have to find where he says it, is that normally they'd put him out there, but it was actually Peterson who sort of lobbied for Steve to get another chance. Here it is. Here's what Dan Bickley said. Allowing Brown to botch the biggest punt of the day is unforgivable, even if he had just cracked an explosive return. Even if the obvious candidate for the moment, Patrick Peterson, lobbied for his teammate to get another chance. So it was Patrick who was lobbying to get JB back out, that it smoked back out there for another punt return. Someone who hasn't done it much in the pros, to put him in a situation where he has to make a judgment call as to whether to catch the ball or whether to let it go, that's a play in that situation for someone with experience. Now, as Peterson hasn't been a good returner since his rookie year, but his decision-making been okay normally.
Right. I mean, even the punt he muffed in the NFC Championship game wasn't because of a bad decision. He just took his eyes off the ball.
Right. And he secures that. He's on full speed, and who knows what happens after that.
Right.
But, yeah.
I don't understand some of the coaching decisions. I don't know if it's an Arians call or if it's Amos Jones. Like, I don't understand the special teams coaching decisions. Andre Ellington is literally the worst return man in the NFL.
Oh, my gosh.
Literally. Like, I never say this, like, because I think it's asinine. But I promise you that they can sign Jess or myself tomorrow, and we will do a better job, because we will – find a way to make sure that every single time they kick the ball, the Cardinals get the ball to 25, because we'll just take a knee in the end zone. Like, I don't understand. Like, I think there's one kickoff that he didn't field in the end zone. And the rest of them, and even that one, it was like at the
even
one.
The
like,
kick, even the kicks that are short, catch them. They're going to bounce into the end zone.
Right, like... So that's my point. Like, just let that ball go into the end zone and let it hang out. And, you know, like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. So, you know, I think it's just a continuation of blunderous coaching decisions on special teams that have, you know, probably maybe cost them at least one game. Probably can say two, wouldn't you say? So, you know. And who knows about the Minnesota game.
If we're looking directly at special teams play, you know, so we've got the field goals and the blocked punts. Those are the easy ones to look at. But you look at the field position that they start on offense all the time. You look at the returns. I mean, the returns they give up. Now I'm not going to necessarily kill them for the special teams play for that big return that Tavon Austin had against the Rams, simply because the three stooges, they totally stooged Justin Bethel, and he couldn't see. So how was he going to make a play? And it was a little bit on the, you know, cheap side. But nonetheless, it was but there's the thing. Fans have been calling for Amos Jones for some time. Bruce Arians said it's definitely not coaching. Either being coached extremely, extremely well. Why does it – I don't understand why there continue to be – I'm not sure what a different special teams coach does. I mean, you change the coach and then what? Because I'm sure that it's not Amos Jones just saying, yeah, do whatever. I know Arian's going to be extremely defensive. He's going to be very, very – going to take care of Amos. And they just want – he's one of his guys. But – would anything be different if they brought in a Kevin Spencer or they bring in another coach? Because these seem to be just mistakes that players are making on the field for whatever reason. Why are they making these mistakes?
That, you know, that's the question. That's what doesn't make sense. And it's so different than last year. And, you know, you can kind of trace it all the way back to this off season with some of the decisions they made personnel wise, right? Like, I mean, you could even kind of trace it back to last year. My dad and I were actually talking about it when they signed Justin Bethel to a big, you know, contract that is typically saved for a number two cornerback, at worst a number three cornerback. And he's a guy that really, you know, I don't, does he belong on the field as a cornerback? I mean, I think that's a legitimate question to ask. And so in turn, what happens? Oh, well, you let go of Jerod Powers, who's having kind of that career renaissance in Baltimore. You know, and it just kind of, it's kind of taken off from there. It, you know, from going from a GM and a coach that seem to make every call the right call, now all of a sudden, you know, like you said, what is it, the personnel? Like, do they not know their own personnel? Do they not, or do they just have such blind faith in their personnel and coaching staff that they don't want to see what the struggles are? That I don't know if it's something that, like, you and I could even really understand. I think we can speculate on it, but I don't know if it's anything that.
Well, and then you look at the draft decisions. They talked about the draft selections that they made, about their ability to make the impact in year one in special teams. Brennan Williams, one of the nation's best special teams players in college. Marquis Christian, Harlan Miller, all three of those guys were in part selected because they were supposed to be impact special teams player in year one.
And then, but then,
Miller's on the practice squad. Christian's not even a Cardinal.
Right. They let Christian go to keep a punter for an extra week. Like,
and then Brandon Williams, even you know, after he wasn't starting, he wasn't even playing special teams.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, that's crazy.
This just doesn't make any sense at all.
It's, right, you know, and that, I mean, and that's the reality.
That's a completely different. That's a completely different. So special teams issues just continues to be a problem. They make mistakes on special teams, and so you have a number nine ranked offense in terms of yards, a number one ranked defense, under 500 because you can point to specifically special teams gaffe led to a field. So bad snap leads to a missed kick in week one. They should have won that game. That's one win. Punt blocked, mixed extra points in the Seattle. That's two wins. You have the return against Los Angeles that gives them the win. So that's potentially three wins. Oh, and then on top of that, the difference in the game. What was the difference in the game on Sunday? That 104-yard kickoff return for touchdown. We don't know if they'll go down and score again anyway. So that's potentially four wins because of special teams problems. Or so instead of looking at, I mean, potentially if they have a solid special teams unit, instead of sitting at 4-5-1, 9-1, or 8-1, or whatever,
8-1-1, yeah, but that's the thing, man. Like, it's just
maddening. It's maddening.
You can't say that something's a priority, and then draft all these guys and bring in all these guys that are supposed to make the unit better, and then none of them really see the field.
Right.
Right? Like you talk the talk, you even walk the walk to an extent, but then when it came time, when the lights came on, you got the same dudes out there. Like, that's crazy. And that's kind of where this whole season's been, hasn't it? Like, you sit there going, this isn't right. Like, this doesn't make any sense. And that's, I mean, that's how I feel about it.
So let's turn to the next problem.
turnovers. Well, that's before the turnovers. But only before the turnovers. Protection of Carson Palmer. This offensive line
sucks.
Oh my gosh. I mean, let's look at this. Say what we want about Carson Palmer's numbers. Let's look at the number of sacks he's taken this year. He's now, I mean, they've given up 31 sacks, but he's been sacked 30 times this year. He was sacked 26 times. There are 25, 26 times all last season. And you wonder why Palmer's having a down year. Jared Valdez, this was one of the matchups where, yes, this was going to be a problem. And I'll turn that to the next problem. This was a game where the edge rushers were supposed to dominate this game. And guess what? Minnesota did. Arizona's didn't. Minnesota's offensive line problems are as well documented as the fact that the Cardinals are playing with a bunch of hodgepodge. You know, you've got right tackle DJ Hump had a bad game. He's got half a season of experience under his belt. John Wetzel, he was starting his second game ever at left tackle. Mike Iupati gets hurt during the game. And Mike Iupati is clearly – he's dealing with stuff this year. He's clearly not the same player he was last year.
Yeah, he doesn't even need to be out there. But,
Earl Watford – I mean, they lost Evan Mathis. Earl Watford is – you know, we now know why Earl Watford has not been a starter. And, I mean, there's some – say this. A.Q. Shipley, for as much heat as he's taken, the Cardinals have had all year.
That sucks. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. But, again, it goes back to the reality. Like, did they make a mistake letting go of Bobby Massey? I wouldn't say Bobby Massey's, like
– Bobby Massey's had a bad year, though, this year, so it's not like –
One, I wouldn't say he's leaps and bounds better than DJ Humphreys, but, you know, he was part of an offensive line that didn't have the same amount of issues.
How is Ted Larson better than what we've seen this year? Really? How is it that Ted Larson, the production we got from, was better than what we got from Evan Mathis and Earl Watford? Come on.
Man, I'm telling you what. Here's a question, and we can ponder this. What offensive line decision has Kime made that you look at and go, all right, like that was a great decision? Outside of Jared Valdez, which was kind of obvious, like Iupati's been good, but it's clear he's inferior as a pass blocker. I mean, it's clear. And this year, especially. Yeah. He was pretty good last year in pass block, but I mean, it was still clearly his weakest part of his game. And San Francisco was like, man, we're not going to pay this dude who's a run-blocking guard. Like, he's going to get our quarterback killed. Even if that quarterback is, you know, Blaine Gabbert. Like, he's going to get this dude killed. you look at it, they had to bring back Lyle Sendeline because A.Q. Shipley wasn't doing it. They drafted Jonathan Cooper. Clearly, you know, he's gone. DJ Humphreys is – early in his development, but, you know, through 10 games.
Okay.
Yeah, and that'd be generous, probably. I mean, let's be honest. Like, Bobby Massey was a fourth-round pick. DJ Humphreys was the 24th pick, or what I think. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, he was a first-round pick. Like, there should be a discernible difference, right? And I know it's not because of Humphrey's desire. Like, dude spent his entire offseason working to get better. You know? So, that's my question. Why have they invested so heavily in the offensive line and
done so poorly at it?
Well, and you can legitimately ask, like, hey, is this the reason this team is not going to make the playoffs in 2016? It was because the offensive line is atrocious, and it's reverted Carson Palmer back to being, you know, a very average quarterback. Like, that doesn't make a lick of sense. They've invested so heavily. How is that? It doesn't make sense.
No, and it leads us to the turnovers. Carson Palmer with the two interceptions. He's now one shy of his 2015 total. He's got 10 interceptions on the year, not nearly on pace for the touchdowns he had. I'm not going to kill him for you know, in the moment, the interception that was returned for a touchdown. I mean, oh my gosh, what was he doing? Looking at that play again, obviously they
missed a hold.
They missed the hold. John Brown didn't do a good job of selling the fact that he was breaking out, that he was going out to get the ball. Because if he does his, I mean, if he's not held, that's a touchdown. And then on the other part, play I saw on TV, they showed from the on-field camera, the one that hangs down, that what they showed kind of the view from behind the line of scrimmage. Couldn't have seen Xavier Rhodes back there. He was completely covered up by Munerlin and Brown ahead of him. And so there was, he couldn't have even seen that. We said, maybe he should have known he was there, but he couldn't have been. And I think originally that Rhodes was, I think he originally was trailing Larry Fitzgerald, kind of changed, I think, when he read what the route was going to be. So, but Rhodes was invisible because Carson put the ball where he expected Brown to be. Brown didn't sell the route, and so, of course, he didn't get the flag, and then the refs just plain, they missed the hold. So I don't kill him for that. The throw to Floyd, it's just been kind of Palmer's thing. It's just been Palmer's thing.
And you'd like to see, and everybody knows, like, I'll kill a quarterback for throwing stupid plays like that, but, like, you'd like to see more of an effort from Floyd. But I think in both scenarios, and I get your spot about, like, he probably didn't see Rhodes, but dude's got to be aware. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, both of those throws were into what? Double coverage. Like, both interceptions were into double coverage. And, you know, I hate fake stats. I really do. Like, no, nobody dislikes fake stats as much as I do. But Palmer was one of the luckier quarterbacks in 2015. And through 8 or 9 weeks, I can't remember, he had thrown the most interceptable, I hate that term, interceptable passes
on the season. Palmer's been like that his whole career. I don't have the numbers to prove it, but I've always seen the reaction, of, even when he was in Cincinnati, was the number of interceptions that – That's been Palmer's whole career.
Right. And so you just look at it and you're like, you know, like, it was bound to catch up with him, right? Like, he's right at his average. He's at his career average. And that's the thing that's tough to grasp, I think, for fans, you know, you and I included, is we all expected 2016 to be a continuation of 2015, but there's a legitimate reality that 2015 was the best that a lot of guys were ever going to play in their NFL career, including the most important.
It appears that was the case. The last thing that I'm going to kill the Cardinals for is Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones really had a bad game. I mean, Chandler had – I mean, you look at the stat line that set, you know, Jones got his 8th sack of the season when it was a sack fumble. That's great. Zero pressure on Sam Bradford against a left tackle in TJ Clemmings, who was the worst rated pass protector in the entire league, and another guy. I mean, they're playing with their 10th different tackles. That's what it felt like. They've burned through tackles like I eat candy. And I mean, I go through candy really quick in case that. So that was one of the things. We knew that the Cardinals were going to struggle with the Minnesota pass because they're good. But in turn, the had to dominate on their side of the ball, and they didn't. The numbers that the advanced numbers that Pro Football Focus, I mean, they combined for one sack, what was it, two hits and two pressures? Between the two of them? That couldn't have happened against backup linemen, because Chandler Jones is supposed to be an above, you know, border, you know, second tier pass rusher in the league. And Marcus Golden with his motor, they should be eating backup tackles for lunch. And they didn't.
Right. And, you know, yeah, that sucks. Like, I don't even know how to address that part, because that was one of the things that, you know, I wrote about, you wrote about, we all wrote about. Like, the win, this win was going to stem from the fact that the Cardinals' first round pick was going to be able to man his side of the offensive line. And that the Cardinals, in turn, were going to be able to take advantage of two really awful coming into this game pass protectors on the edge for the Vikings. And for whatever reason, the Vikings just – I mean, it wasn't just DJ Humphreys. They whooped Mike Iupati. They beat up John Wetzel. They made Earl Watford look silly. And the Cardinals had one sack, right? Or they have two?
They had two sacks. Okafor got a sack.
So, I mean, but the rest of the game, I mean, Bradford got hit a couple times, but he wasn't under the duress of Palmer. And again, maybe that goes back to coaching. Maybe that goes back to, hey, this isn't the game to throw deep or work these long flood concept routes. Like, this is the game to get the ball out quick, run the football, and then set up the play action, which was working really well in the first half, to open up things down the field. But, you know, it is what it is.
So here's the thing on the running game. Do you feel that they abandoned the running game in the second half? It looks like they did.
I don't know if abandon's the right word. I would just say that we've talked about it before. I think everybody's watched it many times. What happens is simply Bruce Arians believes too heavily in Carson Palmer, the passing game, and that this is the way that you get back into games. And so even if they're down, you know, a touchdown and there's 6 minutes left, like, did you watch the Raiders Texans game last night?
I had watched some of it.
Okay. So the Raiders get the ball. Now, granted, it's tied, but the Raiders get the ball. They haven't run the ball worth a damn all night. And they run the football like two or three times. And then they throw a pass to in the flat to the running back, something kind of, you know, short and quick. Then they throw a smoke route to the wide receiver, and that's what they score on. Like, they weren't trying to throw the ball down the field. Like, they weren't trying to, and they have maybe the second best offensive line in the NFL. And they, you know, people bag on Derek Carr because he's only averages 7.3 yards per attempt or something like that. But you know what? I'd rather have 7.3 yards per attempt and the success of the Raiders than average, you know, nearly 9 like the Cardinals do and be 4-5-1 and scratching my head at what the hell's going on. Like, sometimes you just have to understand the flow and the game that is occurring. And I don't think it's abandoned. I don't think he does it on purpose. I just think he goes back to what he's comfortable with and who he trusts the most. And it's not that he doesn't trust David Johnson, because David Johnson's out there the entire time. I think he just trusts Carson Palmer to make the right plays.
Breakdown. So I'm going to kind of piggyback off what they said on the radio recently. The truth is, while they look at the number of carries, what ended up happening wasn't that they gave up on the run. It's that they were down so much, and it wasn't until they were down 13 points in the fourth, you know. And so this is how their second half drives went. Half after they gave up the touchdown on the kickoff return, they ran the ball. David Johnson had a carry. Then it was an incomplete pass to David Johnson. Then it was another incomplete pass to David Johnson. So they were going to David Johnson. So it was the three and out. next drive. David Johnson carry, David Johnson carry, or sack. So three of the first six plays were in the second half offensively for the Cardinals were runs. And another two of them were passes to David Johnson. That's the ball on their first intercepted, so you know they didn't get a chance to run the ball after that. Then they go and score, they kick the field goal. They're now up 30-17. The Cardinals then get to seconds left in the third quarter. They're now down 13 points at that point. Yes, kind of out of the question. They're down two scores with basically a quarter left. Abandoned the run. This wasn't so much abandoning the run as it was the situation dictated that, because they tried to get the ball to David Johnson, but they couldn't drives. Otherwise, they would have done more. And then in the fourth quarter, they had to pass the ball.
Right. And that was the whole thing is like I saw a stat from Arif Hassan, who does great work for the Vikings, a bunch of sites for the Vikings. And when they had Linval Joseph in, the Cardinals averaged like 3.3 or 3.8 yards per carry. And then when Linval Joseph was out, the Cardinals averaged like 7-plus yards a carry. So clearly the Cardinals probably had the same stats on their sideline. Like, all right, like Linval's in. Let's not abandon the run. Let's not abandon DJ. And I don't think they ever abandoned DJ. I just think they think, okay, well, we can't win in this way, so we need to go back to the other way.
So yeah, so that's a whole lot of stuff. Is there any other bad stuff we want to talk about? Because geez.
No.
So next up on Rise Up See Red, we're going to talk a little more. This is almost a little more hopeless because we're going to talk about the playoff picture. about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFC. We're back on Rise Up See Red, and let's talk playoff scenarios. The Cardinals. Now, again, I will say I am a Cardinals fan. We're both Cardinals fans, so it's not like we're burying them for the sake of burying them. We still root for the Cardinals to do it. I said the Cardinals season ended in Carolina. I think we can now say that it's not quite the eulogy, but I think that Minnesota loss just put them 6 feet under. Not only are they're dead and buried, but here's the scenario. They have 4-5-1. 6 games left. They're 3 games behind. They're 3 games behind Seattle. That means Cardinals have to basically win out, and they have to somehow win 3 more games than the Seahawks, with one of those games that they win being Seattle. That's not happening. They are now 2 games in seed in the NFC, but they didn't do themselves any favor because Washington also won. So they're 6-3-1 as the number 6 seed. They are back behind for Tampa Bay at 5-5 and Philadelphia at 5-5. They had the opportunity to would have been the number 7 seed because Washington won. But now at 4-5-1, even with Washington. Now, granted, they beat Washington. They're only a game back. But they're 2 games behind. They're 2 games behind Washington, and they've got 3 teams between them and Washington. So even to make the 6th seed, they have to leapfrog 3 other teams and the Redskins. And they're 2 games back of the Redskins. Now, granted, again, they can gain a game back. But the Cardinals have a tough schedule. They have a tough schedule for the rest of the way. They have the division-leading Falcons. Then they have the playoff-bound Redskins. They have a Miami Dolphins team that has won 5 straight. Then they have New Orleans, who's in the mix. Then they have the division leading Seahawks. And then they have the Los Angeles Rams, who've already beaten them this year. You know, at this point, it's looking very grim, technically. But it looks grim.
Yeah, well, and here's the other thing, right? The good, you know, we'll start there. The good. Minnesota, who's leading the wild card right now, has to still play Green Bay, who sucks, but Green Bay and Detroit, and they get Detroit on a short week this week. So, you know, there could be two losses maybe. They also have to play the Cowboys and the Colts. So, you know, maybe. Like you said, maybe.
It's possible. But again, this comes down to the part about the Cardinals. What about their play makes you think that they can do it? And I've said all along, you know, maybe they don't need 10 wins. I'm pretty sure they kind of need 10 wins. So that means winning out and at minimum rest of the way. What about this Cardinals season tells us 5 of 6 games?
Right. Well, and the other thing is that, you know, the NFC East has two of those spots, and the Eagles are ahead of them too. So, you know, you could, again, like, we can find a path to the Cardinals making the playoffs. I think the issue is I don't know if the Cardinals can find a path for themselves to make the playoffs. You get what I'm saying? Like, you and I can sit here and talk about all the scenarios, but from an on-the-field perspective, like, let's just be honest, this isn't even a playoff team.
Defense, which doesn't make any sense. They are the number one defense in the NFL.
Did you see that tweet today? I think it was from Weinfuss. It might have been Kyle Odegaard. But one of them tweeted out that the last, like, two or three number one defenses, whatever the statistic they used, in the NFL.
Yes, it was absurd.
In the NFL have made the Super Bowl, and the Cardinals aren't even in the playoffs. I mean, it's really not funny, let's be honest. It's not funny.
It's funny cry. It's the funs you laugh in because you don't want to cry.
Well, it's just like, what the hell? So, yeah.
So let's turn our attention to Atlanta. Do you see which the Cardinals beat Atlanta in Atlanta? You know me. You know me. I'm the one that leans to that. This, I don't see any scenario in which the Cardinals beat the Falcons this week. I cannot even imagine them doing that. Now, I'd love to see it, and I'll be super excited if they do, but I can't bring myself to even say that that's going to happen. Like, even for a prediction where I never pick against the Cardinals.
I'm trying to think of a path for them to actually win this game. Vic Beasley is going to eat DJ Humphreys alive on the edge.
Yeah, John Wetzel.
Yeah. and you know he's licking his chops too.
Oh my gosh, like, yes. He is.
Like, oh, you guys didn't want to sign me again, huh? So no. I mean, the thing is this, right? The Falcons defense outside of their pass rush is fairly not good. So in theory, the Cardinals offense could find a way to get going again, right? But again, it comes back to the reality that they haven't
look what they did against San Francisco.
Right. They haven't done it all year. So why are we expecting it this week? I'm kind of with, like you and I can sit here and dissect a path for them to win this game. But the reality is the players game. Have to play it. We weren't even going to talk about game. That. So what you're saying is they're already down 7-0.
We're going to spot Atlanta 10 points because they're better offensively than Minnesota. They're going to spot Atlanta 10 points before they even decide to start playing.
That's all right. I got Matt Bryan as my kicker in fantasy, so I should be good to go.
So you want
to know something crazy? I'm sure this will make all the people that are still listening mad, but I still started the Vikings defense against the Cardinals this
You're
weekend.
You're a terrible human being. You're a terrible person, Seth.
Because I was like, oh, man. Like, I legit thought about trading it out, and I'm like, Palmer, early game. Like, he's due for a couple picks. The touchdowns I didn't see coming, if we're being completely honest. But I figured
two picks, five sacks, four sacks.
Well, yeah, it was the sacks and the interceptions I saw coming. You and I wrote about it. We're like, you can't just get that knowledge out of your head once you have it in there. Let's be honest.
Right.
So, depressing. So yeah, I don't see a win coming this week. But you and I talked about it off the air. So, fans, if you want something to be excited about, I think the Cardinals are going to lose tomorrow or Sunday. And then I think they're going to win the next three in a row. So do with that as you wish.
So
that puts them at
7-6-1.
Yeah. So, I mean, 9-6-1 is still in play. And if all those teams, you know, cannibalize each other, you can find that path again for the Arizona Cardinals. Let's wait to get excited about that until they're at 7-6-1 though.
But no, and then we can that would be actually kind of fun. Now, Cardinals like to do that. Just so, yeah. If you're still listening to the show, thank you. I mean, good job. This has probably been one of the shows I can recall ever having since we started.
It's definitely melancholy on this Thanksgiving week. We're not giving much thanks. But, I mean, let's be honest. The Cardinals haven't given us the opportunity to this year. So, you know, Jess and I – Jess is honestly the most positive Cardinals fan I know. And when Jess gets on before the show starts and Jess and I talk, just the two of us, and he's like, man, I don't know what – I don't know. And when Jess is as a fan, not even as a writer, but as a fan, like, I just don't know what's going on. You know things are bad because you always find the positive spin in every single thing that happens. And you're at a loss for words as a fan.
We're looking at 4-6-1. Good. Oh, jeez. You know what they're going to do? They're going to go win. And good. Good, because that'd be fantastic.
Exactly.
I said it a few weeks ago, the Cardinals season, and, you know, basically, not because they were out of it, but when they lost to Carolina, that told me everything I needed to know about this team. Because in probably their most significant game at that point, a signature game that they needed to win, a revenge game, they came out and just played like poop. And if they couldn't be up for that game, what were they going to do?
Leaving
everything else behind that did happen early in the season. They had a chance to turn the season around. They had every reason to go into that game in Carolina to avenge that terrible loss, and it looks more or less like the type of thing. And they played the same all year. We team is what it, you know, Bill Parcells. The team tells you, the player tells you what he is. Don't think that they're anything different. This is the Cardinals team that they are this year, and you know, they're still in it. The talent's there. We've seen it from other teams before. Carolina did a couple years ago. Carolina did it a couple years ago and won their division. So, you know, there's always hope. So, well, with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And thank you for listening. And we will be back next week to hopefully break down an inexplicable win over the Atlanta Falcons on the road and their high-powered offense. So until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find us at – you can find this show pretty much everywhere. It's on Blog Talk Radio, Rise Up Sea Red. It's featured on CardsWire.com and RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the sites that we both run. Sports360AZ.com. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play. We're on Facebook at Rise Up Sea Red and also on Twitter at Rise Up Sea Red. So on behalf of Seth and I, thank you very much for listening. And we'll be back next week. Go Cardinals.
Have a good night, everybody.